Welcome to the Bumblecast, everyone. I am Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the Orbot and Cubebot to my Dr. Eggman, Kyle Krause.
Wow, I am two robots. Man.
You are two robots.
I am efficient.
Or don't read too much into it. Not saying that you're like lazy or stupid. I'm just saying you keep things running while I maniacally laugh off in the corner.
That works.
We're continuing our celebration of the Sonic 25th anniversary, and I'm kind of kicking myself because if we had started this show a few months earlier, we could be having our 25th episode to coincide.
Oh, man. But if only.
If only. But before we get into the good stuff, which is Sonic, let's talk about some recent news that's been going on with us. Do you want to go first?
No, actually, let's go ahead and start with you.
Okay, well, I just got back from Heroes Con in Charlotte, North Carolina. I've been doing the show for 8 years now. And it's really fun because there's all these kids who've been coming by for so long, and now they're taller than me and graduating high school and making me feel old. We actually have some friends who had their baby during Heroes Con. We wrapped up the show, said hey to the baby as he was brand new. So he's 1 year old. So now I feel super old. Thanks.
Because the baby is a year old, you feel old now?
Yes, because it's like he is now a benchmark for how long it's been in between cons. Never mind, you know, the actual natural passage of time.
Right. I was going to say, time hasn't stopped. Unfortunately, time just keeps going. It's one of those things.
Even though I said this year Heroes Con was going to be my only show, surprise, surprise, I'm announcing that Aaliyah and I will be at Fan Expo this year in Toronto, which is September 1st to the 4th. So if you are in the Great White North in that area, come see us. I'll have more information on BubbleKing.com about tables and times and all that as soon as we know.
I want to be there.
So come on up.
Let me see if I can figure something out. Maybe. We'll see.
And finally, as of this recording, in celebration of the Sonic 25th anniversary, the official Sonic Twitter did a delightful series of recordings with the voice actors for Sonic and Eggman in character, riffing on all sorts of fun stuff. And Mega Drive, which comes out in a few weeks as of this episode, got a shout-out, including the incredibly talented Tyson Hess. So, woohoo! That was really cool.
That was awesome. That whole event was just great. The Sonic Twitter is fantastic. If you're not following it, you need to get on that.
I really like it because it seems to have gone back to the old 90s snark and attitude, the edge that Sonic had over Mario.
Yeah.
None of the squeaky clean Mickey Mouse stuff. No. There's that little bit of bite in there, and I like it.
Right, yes. It's nice. It's very nice. Well, for the last couple weeks since the last episode, E3 happened. There's been a whole ton of gaming news, a lot of cool stuff going on, some new announcements and stuff. I'm not going to talk about any of that, because what I've been doing, what I've been doing is playing a game that came out in February called American Truck Simulator. Pause while everybody turns off the show.
I was going to say, of all things to equate to E3, that's not the first one that came to mind.
Seriously, though, it's a great game. I've been having a lot of fun with it. And
but all you do is drive, isn't it?
What's that?
That's all you do is drive.
It's literally a truck simulator. It's in a truck simulator in America. You drive a truck in America.
Is there like road hazards or weather conditions you have to do? Or
there's rain. It doesn't really make that much of a difference, but there's rain.
Do you have to like budget for gas and time? Do you have to get away from Smokey and the Bandits?
Smokey and the Bandit. Smokey was who you were getting away from. The Bandit was getting away from. Anyway.
they're both jealous of your convoy. Don't correct me on this.
There are cops, yes.
Okay.
They don't really chase you, but they're there. If you run a red light while they happen to be watching you, you instantly get a ticket that you instantly get charged for. I mean, you don't have to, like, go and show up in court or anything. And you don't get pulled over, but you do pay. So, anyway, it's a fun game. I've been having a lot of fun with it, and that's all I've really been doing. You just drive around. Actually, just recently they released the Arizona expansion. The game launched with California and Nevada, and they just released Arizona. And Arizona is my home state, so I'm very familiar with the cities and the locations and the road layouts and everything for most of the areas in the state. And they do a pretty decent job of recreating it. There's some weirdness going on where I'm like, I don't really understand why this connects here. Like, but in the grand scheme of things, I guess it kind of makes sense. And it's just, you know, it's pretty cool to drive around and explore the place I live in a virtual world.
I can see that.
And yeah, so that's what I've been up to. They just recently announced that they're actually, the game has been selling a lot better than they expected, which is very good news.
Absolutely.
And they have expanded their development team and decided to go back and scale up the size of the map to make the map larger, which is good because part of the fun of American Truck Simulator is just kind of, you know, sitting back and driving the long haul. For me, it's been a good way to really listen to some music, you know, just cruise along. I like driving, personally, so just, you know, driving around and making deliveries here and there. It's fun. It's fun for me, anyway. It's relaxing. It's a good way, it's a good way to unwind.
Just, yeah, a nice game to just chill out to. You're not really trying to hit the high score. You're not trying to be that one boss. It's just...
Right.
You're gonna cruise, and you're gonna accomplish something, and you're gonna listen to some good music or podcasts like the Bumblecast, and you're like, yeah,
right,
I like this,
right.
Nice soothing rain as you drive across Arizona, which doesn't have rain.
Yeah, actually it does, but anyway.
No, it doesn't. It's nothing but fire.
It's nothing. It's nothing but desert that people erroneously think it all is. Anyway, there's something else I wanted to mention. Oh yeah. I will say that backing a trailer up into a parking spot, the hardest boss in any video game in the history of video games. Dark Souls, Bloodborne, no, those games are for scrubs. If you want to prove your worth and your ability to play video games at all, I want you to reverse a trailer into a parking spot in American Truck Simulator or Euro Truck Simulator 2. They're both the same game. Just different locations and different trucks, but other than that, they're the same game. If you can do that without hitting anything, and if you can do it in one shot, that will up your gamer cred. I don't care. Dark Souls, Bloodborne, whatever. Those games, whatever. It's, yeah, backing up the trailer for the delivery in American Truck Simulator. Hardest boss ever. Now, at least it is optional, but still. Anyway, I think that's about all I had to cover on that topic.
All right, so we'll move on to the main event then. Yeah. Last episode, we discussed the Cobalt Crusader himself and the video games and the music that really symbolize and are the core of the franchise. So this episode, we're moving on to something a little nearer and dearer and personal to us, the comics and the cartoons.
Yes.
Now, Sonic has had 5 cartoons to his name, not counting, you know, small things off to the side, like small animation projects or proofs of concept. But out of the 5, which is your favorite?
Sad AM.
Okay.
What about you?
Honestly, it's, see, I realize that there are about a million people out there slowly sharpening their knives, listening to what's your answer for. So let's run down the list. Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog, the goofy, done-in-one, like, Ren and Stimpy meets Sonic psychedelic nonsense, wasn't a fan.
That was go ahead, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, that was my first Sonic cartoon, my first introduction to the Sonic in the animated world. And when I was a kid, I really liked it a lot. But as I've gotten older, I've realized it has funny moments. But
it does. But overall,
it's really not as great of a show as I'd like to remember it as.
Now, the second one, Sonic the Hedgehog, also known as Sad AM amongst the fans.
Right.
That's one of my more favorite series, but I'm going to narrow it down to most of season two.
Yeah.
Because going back and rewatching it, season one was a mess.
A little bit,
and
yeah.
There's some standalone episodes in season two that just were a waste of ink and paper. But once it found its feet, and a lot of the voice acting actually stands up pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah.
So, you know, I remember that one fondly, and I'm happy to say that not all of it is based on nostalgia. Sonic Underground, I know it has its fans. And if you enjoy Sonic Underground legitimately, I'm happy for you. I'm glad you found enjoyment from it. Can't stand it myself. I watched the entire thing, start to finish, when we were producing the ill-fated finale comic. And just, it was like pulling teeth. I did it for the fans. I wanted it to be the comic for them, and I wanted to do it right. I wanted to do right by them. But boy, howdy, that was torture, because, man, that music was awful.
Sonic meets Jim and the Holograms. But
and some of the low budget animation cells, the there's a episode very early on where a Tarzan type character swings in from the foreground and manages to land further into the foreground despite swinging towards the background, and it's just
I kind of like Sonic Underground for its sort of, I guess, kitschy charm, but it's a bit rough.
The Sonic X, the episodes that I like about it, I absolutely love. I believe it's episode 20, where the entire gang is on a cruise ship, and Sonic's going stir crazy because he has nowhere to run to and he's surrounded by water. And the day is saved because Ella, the maid, gets bombed by Bokun, and she steals the X Tornado and flies it straight kamikaze style into Eggman's ship because she's so mad that she got punked by Bokun. That's hilarious. I don't care who you are. That's just funny. The earlier stuff where it was kind of exploring Sonic's world, or some of the early season one episodes, some of the Adventure and Venture 2 adaptation episodes, those were fun. I liked those.
Yeah.
Season 3 got way too dark. Like, Cosmo was a fun addition to the cast. I enjoyed her as a character. I liked her arc. The episode where Shadow goes to kill her because he knows that she's a Metarex spy and knows that she's not malicious about it. That was a very engaging episode. Dark, but engaging and fitting for the character, at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's also one of the only times we actually see Shadow and Knuckles fight in animation, and that earns tons of bonus points right there.
Oh, cool. I have really not watched much of Sonic X at all.
Well, spoiler alert.
That's fine.
But it's been out for years now at this point. Yeah. It got really, really dark. Like, Knuckles gets into a knockdown drag-out fight with one of the villains, and you watch his knuckle claws shatter against the armor. And he reacts like he broke a bone, and it's like, ow.
Wow.
And then the dude's armor is pulled off, and he goes tumbling into the lava, and you watch him, you know, sink into what is blatantly his death, and it's like,
dang.
Okay.
Wow. That's Sonic cartoon, all right.
There's, you know, space humans who are flying literal kamikaze bombing missions in their space jets. Others that have been captured by malicious trees, and you're watching the roots grow up under their skin as they die slowly. It's like, this is a Sonic cartoon, right? I'm not saying it has to be all bubbly, fuzzy, cuddly, but come on.
Man.
So, yeah, Sonic X, when it had its moments, it was fun, but I think it kind of misdirection. And the one point that everyone harps on, Chris Thorndike.
Oh, yeah. I think that's why I never watched much of the show.
And the little rich kid who was surrounded by a loving family and friends, but because his parents were away most of the time, he was sad. You can only have so much sympathy. If it was like he was all alone, sure, I can understand it. But it was shown repeatedly that he was always around loving and supporting people. And it's like, All right, you're just a spoiled brat.
Yeah. Is he supposed to be, like, the audience surrogate character? Is he supposed to represent the kids watching the show?
I think so.
That's kind of weird.
And then, of course, we have Sonic Boom.
Yes.
Which is really, really fun.
Yeah. I like Sonic Boom a lot, actually. That's one of the other things I was doing the last couple weeks was catching up on a little bit of Boom. And it's quite enjoyable. It's really silly.
Yeah.
But it's fun.
Did you get to the season finale where they have Metal Sonic and Shadow show up?
No, unfortunately. I didn't get that deep into it at all. I know the episodes are only like 11 minutes long, but still, there's a lot of them.
Those two I won't spoil for you. Suffice to say, when they actually have a bit of drama in the mix, it gets kind of fun. You're like, oh, wait, there's a little more to this than gags.
Yeah. That's kind of where I've been so far, is it's all just gags, which is great, but
I mean, it's so fun.
I wouldn't mind a little bit more meat on that, on them bones. You know what I'm saying?
You get a little bit, so.
Okay, good.
So those are the five Sonic cartoons, two of which had comic book tie-ins, which brings us to the Sonic the Hedgehog comic books.
Comic books.
Now, I will say I had a ton of fun writing for Sonic X. Because that was Looney Tunes with Sonic characters, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
I will forever remember the first time I saw a page from, I believe it was number 17, where Dr. Eggman is attacking everyone in a giant leprechaun mecha and gets tricked into trying to find the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and it goes flying off with this giant rainbow behind it. And Steve Butler, I don't know what magic he used to conjure that panel, but it was one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and I'm happy my name's attached to it. There's also, of course, the famous, or perhaps infamous, El Gran Gordo saga, which was born from a old plan that didn't go through. There was supposed to be a guest writer for the comic who had some WWE ties. And the gag was going to be, you know, he wrote a story about wrestling. Well, whatever the deal was, it fell through. But the idea of Eggman as a masked wrestler was too good to pass up. So the editor said, hey, Ian, you think you can play with this? And I said, oh, yeah, I can. El Gran Gordo was perhaps one of my crowning achievements.
And I completely missed it. This is in Sonic X?
This is in Sonic X, which unfortunately is not for reprint anywhere due to licensing shenanigans. But if you can find it on eBay or somewhere, hunt it up, find it.
I'll have to look into that because Sonic X is the only thing I didn't check out of your run, which is probably a shame. I really should get on that.
And the problem with Sonic X was that it was really restricted to the cartoon show,
right,
which had already gone into syndication at that point.
Right.
And we were more or less stuck between a couple of episodes in season two in terms of continuity. We couldn't really move on to season three because it was just way out of tone, but we couldn't really add a lot of new stuff because of the restrictions set upon by the show licensing.
Mm.
So we had a lot of mental gymnastics of, okay, what stories can we tell? What villains can we introduce? What can we dredge up and make an entertaining story? So once we reached issue number 40 and the option of creating Sonic Universe came onto the table, we decided to pull a Seinfeld and quit while we were ahead.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, go for another maybe year or two and really just drag it into the ground. End on a high note, end on high sales, and use that momentum to launch Sonic Universe, which we'll get to in a bit.
Mm-hmm.
The other tie-in book that I wish had lasted a bit longer was, of course, the Sonic Boom book.
Yeah.
And that was basically Sonic X again. Sonic and Looney Tunes. But without the restrictions. Because Boom is pretty much do whatever.
Yeah. There's just no real continuity, really.
Right. I mean, there's guidelines to follow, of course. Right. But we can do almost anything story-wise because it's more of a sitcom than it is a serial.
Yeah.
And boy, is it cathartic.
Yeah.
Not that I mind, you know, crafting everything in the regular book and universe. Those are fun to plot out. But be able to say, hey, they go go-karting. Sure, why not? Have a two-page spread that's basically a kid's menu little racetrack drawing.
Yes.
With buzzsaw palm trees. Why not?
Yes. Why not? It's great.
There's a sequence in one of the early issues where Amy loses her hammer. And you see the characters looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And there's this beautiful two-page spread of Sonic, you know, literally running up and down walls and on ceilings around the perimeter. And you've got Knuckles coming up with a tiny hammer and told bigger, and comes back with a sledgehammer and told, you know, bigger, and comes back with a screwdriver, and they're just looking at him like, why are you so stupid? I had a lot of fun with Sonic Boom.
Mm-hmm. I can tell. It's a great
But series. The main bread and butter, of course, is Sonic the Hedgehog, which I believe it's late next year will be hitting its 300th issue.
Yeah. And it's been going for what? 20 years. 20 years? Yeah. Wow.
And the sister book, Sonic Universe, which follows the other characters in the franchise and their adventures, it'll be hitting its 100th issue very soon after.
Yeah. Sonic Universe, I think, was a really great addition to the whole thing. It's a really good way to have, like, backup stories without being restricted to backup stories, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I kind of wish we had a third one to play with, because I could do Sonic Universe 2.0 as well, but...
you could just keep going. You could have comics for every character. That probably wouldn't work, but you almost could.
And for the handful of you listening that, you know, weren't already Sonic fans, because let's be reasonable, I know who the audience is. For the past 3 years, we've been rebuilding the universe after a reboot and using the game Sonic Unleashed as a backdrop of sorts for it. It's not a real faithful adaptation. It's more of that's the setting and the stage that we have.
Right.
And Sonic's been going all over the world, meeting new characters, stumbling into new lore, and we've been building and building and building. And the final story arc coming up, Panic in the Sky, is just absolutely gorgeous. I've seen some of the early art for it, and it's going to blow you away. It is the culmination of 3 years of ground building and planning. And, oh, is it going to pay off?
I'm looking forward to it.
I know we got a question in the Q&A later that'll address this, so I'll skip over what comes afterwards. But in Universe, we've got a Knuckles and Amy arc that's going to delve into a lot of new lore. It's going to wrap up their story arc. It's going to tie directly into Panic in the Sky while still being its own thing. And then I don't think I can say, oh, why not? The next story will feature the Chaotix. I'll leave it at that.
Nice. Has it been tough to kind of balance continuity between the two books and to make sure that the main Sonic book is still understandable to readers of only that book?
Not too terribly much. Sometimes the timing of events is a little tricky. It's like, all right, stuff is happening in Universe. Where is that in comparison to Sonic? Is it before? Is it after? Is it concurrent? Is it, right. You know, does this four-issue arc happen in a day, whereas in Sonic, there's a month going on, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a very clear game plan in where I want to take the series, where I want the characters to go. So planning that across the two books is fairly easy to do. And everyone who does guest writing on it, Aaliyah Baker, Evan Stanley, Tracy Yardley, they have been kind enough to come to me first and say, this is what I want to do. Does that interrupt your plans at all? And I can't think of any other instance where I've said, yes, don't do that. It's more like, no, you tell your story. Here's where I was thinking things were going, but I can change to meet your stuff.
Right.
Because this is usually my playground. I like to share my toys.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, on top of all that, coming out in July is a new project that I am super psyched. I can't wait for you guys to see it. Like I said, it was mentioned on the Sonic Twitter. Sonic Mega Drive, which is a classic era story. Everything is done in the kind of Sonic CD art style.
Yeah, it looks beautiful.
Drawn by Tyson Hess, colors by Matt Herms. You cannot ask for a better team. And the thing was, I knew Hess was going to be doing pencils going in.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I could specifically tailor the script to his strengths, to where I know what he can do with it. I know how he can, I know how his comedic timing beats work because I've followed a lot of his comics. I know how he does action. So crafting the script with him in mind really strengthened the end product. And boy, howdy, does he knock it out of the park. I mean, you've seen the preview images online. If not, go to Archie's Twitter. They have it all over the place.
Yeah.
But, oh, man. Oh, Kyle.
It looks gorgeous. I love it.
And even later, the hype for it was so big that we actually got the sequel already approved.
Yes. Yeah.
So Mega Drive, the next level, is coming out later this year. I don't think there's an official date on that yet.
Mm-hmm.
Can't talk about too many details other than, you know, it continues the adventure. Pretty sure Hess and Herms are back for this one, which means it's going to be gorgeous.
Yes.
And hopefully it will continue to turn heads, because I have one more book in me for Mega Drive. If we can get it to work, please, please, please. Fingers crossed. And I, you know what? If it goes even further, I would love it if it turned into, you know, its own book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, done in one Mega Drive adventures. Don't care. I'll make it work. I would love it. Absolutely adore it.
Yes. Now, I have a question for you, Ian.
Yes.
Let's turn back the clock a bit. Quite a bit, actually. Because I'm curious about something. When did you first get into the comics? And I don't mean writing them. I mean reading them.
My first issue was Sonic number 40...
Oh, wow.
43, 42, 40, no, it wasn't 45, because that was when Endgame started.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was the late 30s.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a while. My best friend in the world, Jeffrey. If you're listening, Jeffrey, shout out to you. Woo! Just gifted me the comic out of the blue in grade school. He's like, here, I think you would enjoy this. And, you know, pretty much set me on the path of my life from then on out. So thank you, Jeffrey. And I remember reading through it and not understanding a thing. The art was not the best. There have been better artists on there. The story was incredibly dense. It involved time looping and all these characters that I had no idea who they were because they weren't in the games and they weren't in the cartoon. So what's going on?
Yeah.
But something about it, something about the promise of continuation, the sense of adventure, hooked me. So I started following it, and then that was kind of what put me on the edge. The other one was, we were in the comic book store, and I was looking for the latest issue of X-Men, because I was a mature teenager. I only read grown-up comic books.
Yes.
And my little brother needed something to read, because you have to buy him something, of course. And there was Knuckles number 1 of the original miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
There was no X-Men. I was put out. There was some actually major delay that I didn't learn about until years later. But, you know, picked it up, bought it for him, leafed through it myself. And I was like, oh, wait. Knuckles is awesome. Because I played, you know, Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Knuckles is awesome. We know this.
Right. Yes. This has been well established by the last episode.
I never got a chance to play. I hadn't played Chaotix at that point. All I had was a gaming magazine. And I was like, oh, look at all these neat characters with all these crazy abilities. And the Chaotix are here. And they're with Knuckles. That's even cooler.
Yeah.
And from there, it became, you know, that was the tipping. That drove me over. It's like, I want more of Knuckles. I want more of Knuckles and the Chaotix doing awesome things.
Mm-hmm.
Here is a Sonic book that actually has an ongoing story. Let's see where this is going. I don't necessarily understand what's going on, but I want to know what is going on. And that's part of the reason why I put so many of the footnotes in my issues, because when I was growing up, that's what got me to buy the backlog. You know, it would have the footnote saying, oh, they're referencing this issue. Why don't you find out what that is?
Right.
Wink, wink.
Yeah.
So, of course, I went and got it.
Yep.
Same thing happens here. I don't necessarily want the story to be reliant upon it. You know, don't build the foundation out of footnote bricks. But get them curious so they go back and buy Volume 1. Go back and look at Volume 2 and say, oh, wait, this is pretty cool. Let me catch up. And boom, you have a steady readership and trade market and business words.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first comic?
I started with issue 9.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah, I know. I had to actually just go look that up. I had to look up Pseudosonic's first appearance. And it's issue 9. I was in second grade. And I was friends with this kid who told me that there was a Sonic the Hedgehog comic book. And I don't know if I didn't believe him or if I was just like, whoa, really? That's cool. Do you have any? He's like, yeah, I'll bring him in tomorrow. And he actually brought one in tomorrow. He brought one in the next day. Tomorrow.
Yeah. I was going to let it slide.
Tomorrow at the time. And it was Sonic number 9. And I read the heck out of it. It was great. Now, a lot of them early issues, you know, it was definitely a more comedic book. I think it was trying to take elements of both Adventures and Sad AM and sort of combine them. It was kind of weird. But I was a kid. I was in second grade, so I was like 7, 8 years old, somewhere around there. And I was, you know, super duper happy with it. And I think I pretty much begged my mom for a subscription. And my first issue was issue 13, which was the Sonic 3 tie-in, which was a great place to start because I loved Sonic 3. And getting a little bit of a glimpse of the game world and the comic books just really excited me. And I was subscribed all the way up till issue 63, I think. I think after Robotnik was offed is kind of when I just kind of lost interest, I guess, kind of dwindled off, and I never bothered to say, hey, the subscription's coming up. So, but yeah, it was just a really good, as a kid, it was just really good to have that, you know, I'm playing the games, I'm reading the comics, I'm doing all the cool stuff that the cool kids do. Little did I know, that's actually what all the nerdy kids do. And that's perfectly fine. But yeah, that was where I started, was way back with issue 9.
I would think the series by itself, if you stand back and look at it objectively, would be a fascinating study of the approach to license tie-in material in a broader sense.
Yeah.
Because when the comic first started along with the cartoons, there wasn't really a model to follow.
Nope.
You had all the, you know, toy commercial cartoons of the 80s, but those were specifically designed to sell the product. The licensing tie-ins of the 90s were kind of blundering forward, groping in the dark, because who knew if this would take off at all? Sonic was just like any of the other platformer mascot games out there trying to vie for Mario's crown. Nobody knew if he would take off or not.
Mm-hmm.
So the early comics were, you know, the, you know, kind of gag-a-day type of thing, because who knew if it was even going to last?
Yeah.
The whole reason they got away with killing Robotnik in issue number 50 was because they didn't think it was going to last that much longer, because it was a tie-in comic.
Right.
These things don't have any legs.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are.
Yeah. Here we are, 234 issues later.
I think that stems in part from the comic having a continuous narrative.
Yeah.
Being able to stand on its own. And it also helps that the games did similar.
Mm.
If they continued in the Mario tradition of being very story light, I don't know if the comic would have lasted as long as it did. But with Adventures and Adventure and Adventure 2 and such, having that strong narrative basis so that no matter where you are in the franchise, whether you're comic exclusive or game exclusive, or start with the games and go to the comics or vice versa, the idea of Sonic having a plot-driven narrative is everywhere. It's ubiquitous to the franchise.
Mm-hmm.
So with that kind of synergy, it manages to... It works somehow. It's weird. It's a very weird book.
It's kind of interesting to as you're reading through it, to kind of watch the book sort of morph and change as you're reading it, from the gag-a-day sort of silly book into something that's a lot more serious and more narratively driven. It's actually pretty great. But that's about, like, I feel like that kind of starts to happen maybe in the late teens and throughout the 20s, and maybe by the mid-30s it's finally almost kind of codified into what it's going to be. almost, something like that. Barring a few things like, what was that issue with issue 31, I think it is? The one with the Robotnik opening up a fast food joint and trying to poison everybody. That is a bit of a gag a day issue. But after that, I think things really start to come together.
And then it dabbled in the anime fad of the late 90s, kind of lost its way in the early 2000s, where I think a lot of us did, just in general.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then, not to toot my own horn, but I stepped in and kind of tidied up things, put things in boxes, dusted things off. Purged.
Put things in boxes, man. That's kind of dark if you think about it.
Not those kinds of boxes. Or did I mean it that way?
Yes.
Pine boxes. And then...
It's horrible. It's horrible.
The absolutely phenomenal crossover with Mega Man. Man, that was fun.
Oh, yes.
And then the reboot where we were able to bring it closer to the game material, which arguably it should have been from the get-go, but... You know, when there was that huge 5-year blank spot between 3D Blast and Adventure, you got to kind of find your own way.
It was difficult. So, it was definitely a difficult time to really make sense of everything.
So, I don't know. It's just the evolution of the book is, I'm sure it would be a fascinating study for someone who's better versed in the pop media trends over the years. Somebody needs to make a college course out of that.
Yeah. Actually, you know what? I'm thinking of where the book really codified, and I think it was Mecha Madness. I don't know what you think about that. If it was about
funny
that.
Story about Mecha Madness. I had actually ordered a different 48-page special. Didn't get it in the mail. Contacted customer support and asked for it to be delivered. And got it. A bonus copy of an issue I had already ordered, and Mecha Madness, which I didn't even know existed. So I went from Sonic and Knuckles with the Art Mulhenny and... Oh, shoot. Was it Dave Mannix art?
Sonic and Knuckles?
Yeah.
It might have been.
Which isn't, you know, knock them at all, but, you know, the very cartoony, held-back art style, I suppose, to say... And then Mecha Madness, which was Patrick Spaziante just having fun all over the page.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is what the book can be. Tasty.
Yes.
Man. Just the design work on Mecha Sonic and Mecha Knuckles alone.
I got upsold hard by the comic on getting Mecha Madness the special. Because the story starts in a regular book and then continues on in Mecha Madness.
Yeah.
And, see, you know, that was a clever tie-in. It certainly sold me on it.
I want to try to avoid that during my run where I can, because I feel that's too much of a sleight of hand.
It is. It is, but at the time, it worked.
Oh, it absolutely did. I bought it hook, line, and sinker. But,
oh, yeah.
That was one of the things when we did Worlds Unite and we did the battle books, one of the things I stressed when we were plotting it out was that the battle books be fun additional material, but not required reading.
Right.
That you could follow the main crossover and not have to spend the extra $3.99 just to get a plot point.
Right. And that's what I like about, you know, you have the Sonic the Mainline and Sonic Universe, but you can sort of follow either one without the other.
Right. I try to make it so that any universe arc is important, but can also be summed up in a panel or two so that if it needs to come up, we can say, yeah, oh yeah, we did this thing, footnote, and you haven't missed any crucial plot points.
Right.
The things I do for the reader.
Yes. We appreciate it.
I'm sure you speak for everyone.
Of course I do. I'm the only other one here.
Now, there's also that other Sonic comic, the one across the pond,
Yes.
Sonic the Comic. Did you ever get a chance to read that?
You know, I think I only read the first issue.
Oh, wow.
It's not for any other reason other than I just really didn't have any access to it. But this was years ago. I think it got, you know, scanned somewhere. These things happen, unfortunately. But yeah, I think I only read like that first issue, or at least the opening story where Sonic is brown. I thought it was kind of cool, actually. It's a really interesting and neat take on the character.
A very generous Sonic fan loaned me their complete run just so I could read it at one point.
Oh, wow. Nice.
And it's interesting. I'll say this. I wasn't a fan of it overall, but I can appreciate what it was doing.
Right.
And it's very interesting because it has a very British sci-fi feel to it.
Hmm.
The way they approach, you know, the Doctor Who style of sci-fi versus the U.S. brand of sci-fi.
Yeah, yeah.
If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, it's just a very, the European way of approaching storytelling is very different from the American way of storytelling.
Uh-huh.
And it's weird up in Canada because you kind of get a bit of a fusion of the two. But there isn't a Canadian Sonic book, so I don't know where I'm going with this. Anyway, Sonic the comic was an interesting thing. An interesting read overall. And I actually got to meet Nigel Kitching, one of the main writers for the series, at Summer of Sonic one year.
Mm-hmm.
Lovely individual. Had a great time talking to him about, you know, how licensing was different, how approvals were different, and all that jazz. And I said to him, I am so jealous that you came up with the concept of the Brotherhood of Metallics, with Metal Sonic Kai as this kind of giant master mold, Metal Sonic commanding legions of Dalek-esque Metal Sonics.
I have heard about that. That sounds
pretty
awesome.
I want that idea, but I can't use it because it's yours.
It sounds rad, actually.
He says to me, if you want it, use it. And I just kind of made happy puppy noises for a minute, but I can't because there's more than just his good grace. There'd be all sorts of legal shenanigans in the way.
Right.
International copyrights and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
But just the fact that he offered, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know? And some of the page work, especially later on, the painted pages are absolutely gorgeous. I mean, it feels like Sonic kind of gets stuck in one of two poses for a lot of scenes, but the depth and the richness of the colors and the staging of some of the scenes is just breathtaking.
Hmm.
If you ever get a chance, it's worth going through just to experience it.
Yeah, I should look into it and see if I can find a way to check it out.
It also features Dr. Zachary, which I believe predates all other echidnas to show up in Sonic media, aside from Knuckles, of course.
Hmm.
And he also has the distinction of being the first evil white scientist echidna predating Dr. Phenetivus and Ix.
Really? I did not know that.
Evil white cyborg scientist echidna, I should specify.
That's a very specific set of parameters there.
Well, you know, you gotta go with what works.
Right, right. Nice.
So yeah, the Sonic the Comic, Archie Sonic, all the other side comics that popped up here and there, the original manga and the one French comic that everyone says is the precursor to Call. There's a lot of interesting Sonic literature out there, to say nothing of the children's novelizations and all the other little books out there. So
I had one of those, actually, now that I think about it.
The one that made, like, noises when you press the buttons?
No, it was like a short novel, I guess.
Okay.
A novel adaptation. I don't know if this is a thing that people even know about. I'm sure it's been cataloged somewhere on the internet. But there was, like, some sort of novelization of, I guess, like, maybe within the Sad AM universe. It wasn't a novelization of any episodes, I don't think, but it was a story that happens in the Sad AM universe, which I thought was pretty cool. I didn't know if there were any others or anything like that, but
there weren't too many, but I don't know. There's a little factoid that might ruin your childhood. Should I share this with you?
Sure, go ahead. Childhood's already been ruined, so.
One of the writers for those little novelizations said a few years ago that he didn't particularly have any love for the series. It was just a job.
Right.
So to entertain himself, he decided to see how much bondage innuendo he could sneak into the dialogue.
Huh.
And as proof, he submitted a couple pages where Dr. Robotnik and Snively talk about tying up the freedom fighters and all the various types of ropes and knots they could use. And out of context, it seems like a weird kind of side conversation, but, you know, they're evil. Sure, why not? In context, it's like, you sick son of a gun. Okay.
Is this like a Wonder Woman situation going on here?
Yeah. So on that pleasant note, yes. Let's wrap up and happy birthday, Sonic the Hedgehog. You've kept me employed for 10 years. Let's go for another 20.
At least.
Now, this episode, we actually have a patron-sponsored ad from our good friend Daniel H., who has been quite generous with us. He'd like you to take a look at the YouTube channel Brain Trust with Michael Brown, a funny pop culture geek show starring the aforementioned Michael Brown, a real witty cat that Daniel's known for back in his days as a stand-up comic. Videos cover everything from TVs to movies to comic books, and it's all live, to trailer reactions, unboxing videos, all sorts of stuff. He doesn't have a quick YouTube link, so it's recommended that you Google for Brain Trust with Michael Brown, and it should pull up what you're looking for. If you do go visit his channel, Michael Brown's that is, say something in the comments like, Bumblecast sent me, just so that we know that we're reaching out there, and maybe if you see somebody say that, give them an upvote. You know, start a little movement. Show that the people who listen to the Bumblecast truly care.
Awesome. Thank you very much, Daniel. You're awesome.
Do we have any priority Q&A this time?
All right, yeah. Let's get into some priority Q&A. We got one here from Samuel P. He says, I'm really looking forward to Sonic Mega Drive.
Yeah, you are. Yeah, we all are.
We all are. Oh, I am. Oh, man. I'm so pumped. Sonic Mega Drive. Yeah, anyway.
Dial it down.
I was wondering if Sega gave you the green light to do a similar book to flesh out other eras of the games. Which games would you most like to expand on?
Call me crazy, but I would like to take a crack at tightening up Sonic Heroes' story.
Mm-hmm. That sounds actually like a pretty good idea.
I mean, from the way that, especially with the whole Shadow subplot, the way that the Chaotix are used by Eggman to subvert Neo Metal Sonic's ambitions, I think is really, really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I would like to take a shot at that story and just, you know, fine-tune a couple things and make it into a tighter narrative, because I think it would really work.
Yeah, you can clean that one up a bit, I think.
Any other game I'd like to take a crack at, sure, but if we were to have more of an era type of thing, I would like to basically have a Sonic Mega Drive ongoing, so to speak. You know, classic era stories, not necessarily very continuity heavy, and just have fun adventures with the early forms of the cast. Because to me, the regular book is a continuation of, what are they calling it, the modern or the legacy now? Whatever term they're using. Modern day Sonic.
Something like that, yeah. I'm not sure. Are you going to, do you want to clean up the story for Sega Sonic Popcorn Shop?
I think it's perfect as it is.
Okay, darn. I was hoping you'd be able to convince Sega to let you do that one.
Our good friends over at another podcast, the Super Flower Power Hour, sent me a video of their playthrough of it, and the way that Eggman just prances daintily along with the hammer, absolutely delightful.
Yes, indeed. All right, that does it for the priority Q&A this episode. Let's get into some of the standard Q&A questions this week, starting with one from Yaldabaoth17.
What happened to the other 16?
I don't know. It's their failed experiments. We should probably watch out. They might attack at any time, so we must deal with it. Anyway. What is your plan? What are your plans for Saga lengths after the Shattered World Saga?
I wouldn't say that it's a set number of issues or scope, because I don't want to lock it into some arbitrary number. The arc, so to speak, from after Shattered World and after our 25th anniversary celebration plans is a shorter arc than what I usually do, but that's so we can get it to number 300.
Ah.
After that, I have a general game plan in mind, but I don't know if I'm going to structure it very tightly in a saga. But that's so far down the line that, who knows, plans may change. But it's not like I'm going in saying, okay, it's going to be 2 years exactly, or it's going to be 20 issues exactly. It's where the story needs to go, what stories we're going to tell, and how best tell them.
Right. It's not going to be more structured, kind of like Sonic Universes with four-part
right,
series.
Right.
Yeah. Alrighty. Up next from Will Carpenter Jr., Sonic 1, 2, 3 and Knuckles, or CD? I think we kind of
Sonic 3 and Knuckles. Easy.
We kind of talked about this on the last episode, but yeah, 3 and Knuckles for sure. But I do have to give a nod to CD. I personally love CD. I know you're not a huge fan of it, Ian, but...
Well, it's a love it or hate it type of thing, being, right, you know, more exploration-based.
Right. And I really enjoyed that aspect of it, although the first few times I played it, I actually didn't even really realize that was part of the game. I was just playing it kind of like a standard Sonic game. And I still even really enjoyed it just playing it like that. I think mostly because the music was really cool, and at the time I played it, you know, CD-based music in a video game just wasn't a thing that I had heard, at least. It wasn't a thing for me, so just kind of going through the game and really enjoying the music, which was totally different from anything in the Sonic series before. It was just, I think it's a really good game, and I have a lot of nostalgia for it, so it's a little bit of both for me, I think.
If nothing else, it gave us the one-on-one race with Metal Sonic, and that's just rad.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's true. Metal Sonic's just glorious. All right, so we got one from here, one from the real FTA, Mr. Flynn. In the itchy and scratchy CD-ROM game, is there a way to get out of the dungeon without using the wizard's key?
What the hell is that?
It's the itchy and scratchy CD-ROM game.
And that is the correct response to be all Simpsons nerdy. That's my answer, and I'm sticking to it. Next!
Okay. Ultrasonic 8000 wants to know, is the Great Blue Realm restricted to only the northern oceans of Sonic's world?
We haven't gotten into really defining where the regions of the oceans are. We're already kind of fuzzy on where the continents are and what countries are within them, and that's just the land masses. 70% of the world is, you know, largely unaccounted for.
Right.
That's what I would like to get into one day. I would love it if we could do an encyclopedia. If anyone is listening, push for it, please. But let's not put a hard limit on that just yet. Leave us some room to explore a bit more.
I mean, the world has kind of shattered, so it's a little difficult to say where things exactly are.
Right. But we just introduced the concept of Ocean Mobians.
That too, yeah.
We just introduced the two Oceanic Egg Bosses. There's a lot of exploration and stories to be had.
Right. And our last question this week from ChameleonGuy23. Is there a chance to see a new team of secret freedom fighters someday? I liked the idea of secret agents.
I wouldn't say it's impossible, but it's not my priority right now. One of the things that I actually felt like I got a little too hung up on in the old run was all the time spent in New Metropolis.
Uh-huh.
What I was really trying to work my way out of there so Sonic could go off and adventure in other places, you know, like he's supposed to. But there just kept being plot points that needed to be resolved. And that's part of what this gave rise to the Secret Freedom Fighters. In the current run of the book, the Kingdom of Acorn is not as central a plot point. We don't spend nearly as much time there. That's part of the joy of the Sky Patrol, is you can have the central cast and we can be mobile. So if we had any reason to really dwell on the Kingdom of Acorn and all that jazz, maybe. But right now my focus is on Sonic and the Freedom Fighters and them being away from a central location. You know, being like the Avengers always protecting New York City. Just get them out and let them do something else.
Yeah.
So it's not impossible, but don't look for it in the near future.
Awesome. All right. Well, that wraps up the Q&A for this week. We got anything else we need to get into, Ian, before we plug our stuff and head out of here?
Actually, we need to give a shout out to the composer of the newest cover of the Bumblecast theme song.
Yeah, awesome. This just showed up as we were getting ready to record, so it's awesome.
So, big shout out to Meals.
Yep.
We'll try to put your SoundCloud link in the description below. Thanks so much for doing a cover for us, and here you are, debuting on the Bumblecast!
Ah! At soundcloud.com/trogdor101. That's O is O-H, so it's the number one, and then O-H, and then one. So trogdor101 on SoundCloud. Go check it out.
If you want to follow what's going on in my crazy little world, head over to bumbleking.com, or follow me at Twitter at IanFlynnBKC.
And you can find what I'm up to over on Twitter at KyleJCRB. Or you can follow what I'm doing with the KNGI Network over at KNGI.org. You can listen to archives of this show and many others there, including my other video game music-related show, Game Fuel, that also streams live every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern on the 8BitX radio network over at 8BitX.com.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode number 20. Happy birthday, Sonic the Hedgehog, and we will see you next time for Bumblecast episode 21.
Happy birthday, Sonic! Woo!
Okay, hi!
Hi, what's up?
Me. Am I coming through okay?
Yes. Are you up? You're up? I don't know if you're up.
I'm up. I'm not sure. I'm here.
I'm not sure. Hey, thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you like the show, be sure to hit that subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans to make the show even better. Also, rate and review the show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and really helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download.